When you were investigating and Stevenson was investigating children, what about adults? Is it that maybe as we get older, we forget about this stuff, that we just think maybe we're dreaming things? Why children as opposed to adults?
Well, because the kids are the ones generally who report the memories. These kids usually start at a very early age. The average is 36 months, so they're starting around the age of 3. And most of them, by the age of 6 or 7, seem to have forgotten about it completely. Now, that's the age when they're starting school and sort of getting, you know, totally involved in this life. Mm-hmm. But it's also the age where kids of all types lose early childhood memories. So it would make sense that they would lose these memories, too. There are exceptions, and there are occasionally cases where even into adulthood they say that they have some memories. But the vast majority of them forget by the time they're in school.
Based on the scientific investigation of the children's memories of past lives, what conclusion have you drawn about this whole entire phenomenon?
Well, we never draw completely firm conclusions because we're studying this scientifically and we're always open to new data and new possibilities. But in the book, after reviewing the stronger cases that we have, I eventually conclude that the best explanation for the cases is that memories and emotions sometimes can carry over from one life to the next.
Tell me a little bit about your research and how you were able to put this into the book form of Life Before Life.
Well, what we do is very carefully study each case. So young child makes statements. We have agents in various countries looking for these cases for us. When they hear about them, they contact us, and then we go and interview as many people as possible about the case. Often, by the time we get there, the child has made enough statements where somebody's been able to track down the deceased individual whose life they seem to be remembering. So we interview as many witnesses as possible, find out exactly what the child said, particularly before the families met. Then we interview the other family, the family of the deceased individual, and check and try to verify just how accurate the child's statements are for the person who died. Number of these cases, the children have birthmarks, so in that case we try to get autopsy reports or medical records to see how well they match up with wounds on the body of the previous person.
Do they match up?
Often they do, yes.
Oh, my God.
Ian Stevenson wrote a book that contained 225 cases of birthmarks that matched wounds on the previous person, usually fatal wounds. And some of the birthmarks are quite dramatic.
Okay, fatal wounds. Let's assume somebody in that past life, maybe they were stabbed in the stomach, for example. The child would have some kind of birthmark on the stomach, maybe in that region where the stabbing occurred?
That's right. And again, they're often not just little blemishes like, you know, many of us have, but they can be unusual or unusually large, puckered or unusual shapes, that sort of thing.
Now this has got to be one of the most incredible aspects of the research, because it somehow crosses over not only in memory, but also there's a physical tie-in here. How does that occur?
Well, we don't know exactly how it occurs, but our thinking is, or at least my thinking, is that there are other studies that show that mental images can sometimes have very specific results in people. So, for instance, particular people can be hypnotized so that you can tell them you're burning them with something and touch them, and they'll develop a blister and a burn. There are cases where people will relive previous trauma and then develop markings on their skin that match. Like there's this famous case where a guy remembered when he had been tied up and he developed rope marks on his skin. So we know that sometimes mental images can have very specific effects on the body. So in this case, since we think that the consciousness seems to continue past the one life and go on to the next one, it would make sense that in some cases the physical injury was so traumatic that it sort of scarred the consciousness so that it took this mental image with it to the next body and then affected the developing fetus.
That is something, almost as if ghosts take various things with them to that side from the living.
Well, that's right. I don't really think of it in terms of ghosts so much, but as the whatever it is, this piece of the person that continues after the body dies and then enters the next body.
The children who have these past lives, do they remember them as past lives, or do they simply talk about it as if they just know about it and they really don't understand that they indeed might have been somebody else?
Yeah. Well, it can vary. There are some kids, and of course, their language skills may not be fully developed either, but there are some kids who will talk about it very much in the present tense. They'll say to their parents, "You're not my real parents. My real parents live in such and such place."
Oh my.
But there are others who do recognize that it's in the past. They'll say, "I used to be big. I died this way. Now I'm little again." So it sort of varies from case to case.
What seems to be, with the research you've done, the longest time span between a past life and a current life? Does it skew hundreds of years, thousands of years, or just a few?
Well, most of our cases, they are very recent lives. The average is only about 16 months between the death of the previous person and the birth of the child. But there is a lot of variation. Now, you know, if a child talks about living thousands of years ago, obviously it's impossible to verify that. So that does play a role. We've got a couple of well-verified cases from 50 years ago, but most of them are much more recent than that.
Jim, what about children talking about numerous past lives, or do they just talk about one?
Occasionally they will talk about more than one, but the vast majority of them just talk about the one recent one. Well, we've got a fair number who may talk about two. We don't have many that talk about more than that.
Well, how do the parents react when they hear their child talking this way?
Well, that can vary as well. In countries with a belief in reincarnation, where a lot of these cases come from, the parents certainly believe the children, but a lot of times they still don't want to hear about the statements. Sometimes, because in some areas there's a belief that if a child talks about previous lives, then they'll have a shorter life this time. So the parents will try to get them to stop. Other times, frankly, the parents just become very irritated because the children keep saying, "You're not my real parents," and the parents get sick of it. So we've had a number of cases where the parents were fairly brutal in trying to get the children to stop talking.